It's in the second rainfall that there's the secondary roof. Okay. Oh, I see. Okay. Decimals in the first one, and then the varnashams in the second one. Oh, okay. That's interesting. Okay. Hari he sahana vavatu sahana bhunaktu sahajiryam karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So this is the all seven showers?
No, this is the beginning of the first shower.
This is the first shower of the first rain.
Yes. The first droplet of the first shower.
Okay. So this had the overview of. Okay, overview. Overview means the dasamul. Secondary was okay. Vaidhi Bhakti Raganuga Bhava. Okay, that's an interesting way of doing. Okay. So, this is the overview of the philosophy. So, okay. First shower. Obeisances to the lordships, Sri Radha and Krishna. Within this world, there are countless philosophies which, although attempting to reach the truth, are all incomplete and mutually contradictory because of their origin in bewilderment. So this also answers, you can see, this was the first question of the sannyasi. So then this is also where it opens. So he's also going chronologically through everything there. All these philosophies find their perfection in Krishna Bhakti, devotion to Sri Krishna. I begin this book, Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, by offering my respects to Sri Krishna Chaitanya, the bestower of Krishna Bhakti. Right. So it's important to catch this point, is that all philosophy find a perfection in bhakti. In other words, if we're using the point that everything has a value, then its value is when it's connected. Right? Because everything connects back to Krishna. Right. So then it's a matter of which aspect that is fulfilling. Because the point he's making here is they're incomplete and mutually contradictory. They're incomplete because they don't actually describe itself properly, its relationship to the Lord, or relationship to anything else, so it's incomplete. Contradictory is because of that, you can't see the connection, so the form used by one process is different from the form used in another. Does that make sense? So one can't see this connection. So because of that, then it appears that there's so many things going on like that. So then what's in this square, in the box, then this is the notes. Okay. Mangalacharan. The opening paragraph of Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita contains all three elements of a classical Mangalacharan, or invocation of auspiciousness. He offers obeisances to Mahaprabhu, his worshipful deity. One, namaskrit. Kriyatmaka, praise for Krishna Bhakti. Two, Ashir Vadatmaka, and summarizes the subject matter of the book. Three, Vastu Nirdeshatmaka, the soul's quest for perfection. A supporting statement is also made in the English Eighth Rainfall, the book's concluding chapter. This book is meant to delineate the philosophy and theology of Vaishnavism. It is not meant to convey the spiritual taste of bhakti rasa. There are many books written specifically for the relishment of the pastimes of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. The subject matter of those books is meant for tasting. Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita 3.5. So it means you have the deity, you're offering obeisance to the deity, you're asking for blessings from the deity that you can properly perform the duty, and you're telling what the subject matter is. So the opening must have that connection, because also then what it is you're asking for, what the subject matter is, will be also connected to the deity. So then that you can tell all those different things. And then here he's making the point is that this book is giving what is the philosophy and theology. It's not to give you a taste of Krishna bhakti. It's defining what is Krishna bhakti. Right? Other books are written to give that taste. Right? You know, Chaitanya Charitamrita is to give that taste. Bhagavatam is to give the taste. But this is to analyze what is the cause of that taste, why that taste is there, why that's the natural position, why that taste is the actual endeavor. Anubandha Chatushtaya. Moreover, one may also infer from this paragraph the four essential elements of the work, Anubandha Chatushtaya. Also here in the Mangalacharan, using the opening and using the closing, that is in Mimamsa. That is one of the ways to tell what's the subject matter of the book. How does it open? How does it close? Right? Does that make sense? So that's how you can make a note. Moreover, one may also infer from this paragraph the four essential elements of the work, Anubandha Chatushtaya. The qualification of the student, one, Adhikarna, is that they be sincere about reaching the truth. Right? So here, the truth, we meaning the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he's the substance, right? Otherwise, truth just means facts. Mm-hmm. But the actual supreme fact is, you know, Krishna. So the truth, right? You know, there's so many facts, but this is the fact, right? The connection to Sambandha between the book and its subject is that it addresses the objections to bhakti which are raised by each type of human lifestyle, right? Because it's important to, if you want to be able to, one, practice it yourself, and two, be able to give it to others, you have to know what are these lifestyles that come up in human culture due to the modes of nature. Right? In other words, someone's trying to obtain something, but he's doing it through the mode of goodness or passion or ignorance. So someone may be trying to do something good, but he's using passion or ignorance, so it doesn't actually come out so well. So if you understand what's the position they're trying to do, you know what they're, then you show them how to do that within devotional service. And how, therefore, the form of goodness is better. Right? This is what becomes bewildering many times for devotees, is that they'll say the Vedic culture doesn't apply to nowadays. Basically, that would be saying is the mode of goodness should not be practiced nowadays. We should just use the modes of passion and ignorance. And generally speaking, for most, it's ignorance. Like that. And so, you know, that would be the appropriate thing to use for the Lord. Okay, but are you connecting it to the Lord? And connecting ignorance to the Lord, isn't it so much better to connect goodness? That makes sense. Because that's what's changed. It's just the modes that are functioning. You know, people's consciousness. But otherwise, the trees are still here, the same trees. You look in an old book on trees, and it's just still the same tree. Got the same leaves. Does the same thing. Yes?
Why am I so bewildered by the forms?
Why so bewildered by the forms?
Because we always fall into the same trap.
Because the forms are the feminine aspect, right? And we're trying to be God. We're trying to be the masculine position that therefore enjoys the feminine aspect. So the focus all goes on the forms, right? But the form, what we make the mistake is that the forms, all they do is manifest the substance. But we mistakenly think it's the form that's giving the taste. It's the substance that gives the taste. The form is simply the medium for the manifestation of the substance. So due to that ignorance, then we become also, again, attracted by the form. Right? We want to enjoy, you need the forms. Right? We want to enjoy a specific quality. So that requires the form. So when you see the form, you think, this means... Right? Then, we mistakenly think the form itself is actually the cause of the manifestation. I mean, or the, actually is the quality we're looking for, the substance. Does that make sense? So both of these. So if you break down, I'm not the controller and enjoyer, I'm the servant, then we can start to appreciate that in the same way as all energy is just manifesting the Lord. So it's the Lord who's the center. Does that make sense? So, and then according to one's conditioning, so that means all living entities are trying to control and enjoy. So that's standard. But according to the particular combination of the modes, they want to enjoy and control in a certain way. Does that make sense? You know, like these trees here, they're here and they're happy with the particular weather that's here. But if you make the land overly rocky, overly dry, and the wind that's blowing is always salty, these trees won't like it. But olive trees will be in ecstasy. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the thing. It's just you change the modes, you change the situation, you know, what situation they function in. That makes sense? Yes? No? Okay. Okay. Sambandha. The connection between the book and its subject is that it addresses the objections to bhakti which are raised by each type of human lifestyle, and establishes that all philosophies find their perfection in Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Right? Because Sambandha addresses the Lord, the jiva, and the material energy. Right? So because of that, that's why that would be Sambandha. Because this is dealing with whatever it is, how the living entity identifies himself, and how he endeavors himself. So everything will find its perfection in, in this teaching, because this is actually dealing with the Sambandha, right? Like that. Because the Sambandha is the lifestyles, is he? That's what we see, is the modern doesn't deal with that. It's simply dealing with what you can do to make money. Mm-hmm. But they're not actually addressing who you are, who's God, what's the material energy. Right? It's just simply how to maintain yourself within that state of illusion of not addressing that. Because if you address it, then the question is, well, do I want to be making money? Or making money like this? Or is my goal should be that? So that's why the Sambandha Gyan is generally always avoided. Like that.
Can we also point out that from what he is writing, that as we were describing last year, that one's position in modes of nature defines his faith?
Yes.
He writes that lifestyle means.
Yes. Yeah. Be just everything. The values. Everything that they're doing. Like that. Yeah. Okay. And so Lord Chaitanya's teachings, they are the subject matter itself. Right. Three. Vishaya is the living entity's search for truth and the result of proper study and application. And four, Prayojana is devotion to Sri Krishna. Right? So then these come out in here. Panchanga Nyaya. The above is consistent with Bhaktivinoda Thakura's statements from the eighth rainfall. Eighth rainfall is the conclusion, right?
Correct.
Okay. The learned have concluded there are five components of deliberation. Vishaya, general thesis. Shamshaya, expression of doubt. Sangati, reconciliation. Purva Paksha, opposition, and Siddhanta, conclusion. One may ask, what is the subject under deliberation in this book? I answer, the subject under deliberation is the life of the spirit soul. What then is the doubt? The doubt is, what is life, and what is the goal of life? Bhaktivinoda Thakura is thus applying the five limbs of logical analysis, Panchanga Nyaya, to understand the topic at hand, the living entity. Depending on where their intelligence is situated within the modes of material nature, each type of person nurtures their own respective subject, doubt, reconciliation, objection, and conclusion. In upcoming rainfalls, Bhaktivinoda Thakura will employ this time-honored rational framework to dissect opposing viewpoints and establish a conclusion that bhakti is not only the highest attainment, but in fact the only way of life for the living being. Okay, so that then establishes our logical options. Yes.
Can Is it the same, you can say, topic that is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita?
Yes, this is just taking, means the Bhagavad Gita is going, basically, you could say, in a conversation. So you're taking it in like layers. You're dealing with the thing and then going deeper. Because when there's a basis of knowledge, then you go deeper and deeper and deeper. This one, you're just taking what is the subject matter and breaking it down into its natural 10 parts. And then discussing each one right after another. Because that way also it progresses. But that would be just, that would be using the logical. Right? In other words, the Dasa Mool can be studied by those who appreciate the concept. Mm-hmm. Right, but if you're talking to someone who doesn't appreciate, then they're going to deal. One point will be a problem, a doubt. So you'll have to deal everything with that. Mm-hmm. Then, having dealt with that, then you can go into other parts. Mm-hmm. So it won't follow the same. It will be developing, but it won't follow that same logical presentation. That's pure. That's intellectual, yes. Right? It'll, because you're adding the mind to it. Mm-hmm. So then the mind is what brings up doubts, right? So if it's just, it doesn't quite catch the intellectual thing, it's just purely a doubt. But much of the time you're dealing with misgiving, which means that I doubt it because I want a different answer. You know, so it's a different, it means if I can't understand it, you know, it doesn't make sense, it seems contradictory, that's one thing. So then it's just a matter of explaining it again, and then it's clear. But a doubt, I mean, a misgiving is even explained clearly, even you understand it, you still don't want to accept it. Because you actually want a different conclusion. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why you have to remove doubts and misgivings. Right? That, so that's the thing, is that people worrying about the misgiving then don't actually deal with the doubt. Right? Does that make sense? You're like, I was giving an example yesterday, is that someone can't understand sin, so therefore, you know, then you just avoid the whole thing altogether. But it's just a matter of you find the principle, because the principle of sin is always there. Just like you're discussing something in England, and this one the senior preacher's there talking about the parent, you know, authority in that, and about the father and this and that. And if someone, it didn't work well, they wouldn't have that kind of concept so well. And then this devotee then said, yes, he met one, you know, I'm not sure how old he was, but, you know, he would have been a student. And he had grown up with never any father figure in his life. Right? He didn't have a father, there wasn't one, there wasn't any man, there was nothing. He didn't understand the concept at all. So when they said, God's like the father, then they said, what does that mean? He had no idea at all. But you can find is that the position of authority, and then find it in something else, like that. You know, so someone like that, let's say they're part of a gang. So the guy who's running it, he's taking care, he'll protect. And so it's the same principle. So you have to just find where it works. So that's what you're dealing with here when you're dealing with the. You have the general thesis, the Vishaya. When the Shamshaya comes up, the expression of doubt. Then you have to then give the Purvapaksha, they give the Purvapaksha. So they have their expression of doubt and their problems, and you deal with those, right? So then you can reconcile it, because you've shown it's the same thing, right? And then, because that's the difficulty, is that he keeps bringing out as these contradictory, mutually contradictory positions that these different philosophies and religions hold. So those all have to be reconciled. So to do that, you have to have a system that everything that everybody is trying to obtain, it shows how that's obtainable. You know? Because otherwise, each one is mutually contradictory, because they're incomplete. So it doesn't include someone. It's like if I do something and it doesn't work, I do something, it works to some degree, then someone else will come along and they'll see the part that doesn't work. So then they'll work out something that deals with the part that I'm dealing with that doesn't work. But in doing that, they may have lost some or all of the part that did work. Like that. But, you know, when you say, you know, you don't have this, and they'll say, but you don't have that. You know? So the thing is that the Vedic it's full in that it contains what is missing in both, but it also contains what's working in both. But because it's not dealing with the modes of nature, therefore each one of those can be fulfilled without carrying the fragrance of either of them. Right? It carries its original transcendental position. Because otherwise, someone's doing something, but it has that fragrance of that particular, you know, culture or human endeavor. And then someone else has another, and because if you don't like the fragrance, it's a problem. Does that make sense? Yes. No? The fragrance didn't work? Hmm? Too poetic? In other words, there's a mood that goes along with something. Like that. You know, because of that, because of the modes of nature, the particular combination makes a particular presentation. Like Varna means color, so there's a particular color that's there. So the colors seem to be discordant with each other. But actually that's only because you don't see a connection with its original. You see a connection with the original, then each has its place. Then, back to the book. There are three objects in this universe. The Lord, conscious entities, and matter. Right? So this is Sambandhyan. The Lord, conscious entities, and matter. Right? So I guess we're not worried about unconscious entities. Because matter is the unconscious entity.
That's, yeah.
So conscious and unconscious entities. Yes. Okay, footnote. By chance, two birds have made a nest together in the same tree. The two birds are friends and are of a similar nature. One of them, however, is eating the fruits of the tree, whereas the other, who does not eat the fruits, is in a superior position due to his potency. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.6. So he is the Lord is the bird who's not eating. The conscious entities are the birds who's eating, and the matter is what the conscious entity or the other bird is eating. No? So the example is, it's the full material energy. You have the Lord, the living entity, and matter.
Right? I just add that these footnotes are about him and Thakur's original.
These are original footnotes. Oh, all means all the footnotes.
Yeah, for the most part.
That's great. Okay, cool. Matter is that substance without volition.
What is volition?
Huh?
What is volition?
What would be volition?
Will.
Will.
Yeah, the will to act.
So matter is that sun without will. It means matter doesn't have desires. It's not like this rock is sitting here going, it is so boring here. I really wish I was, you know, in Miami or something. It's not thinking that. You know. Does that make sense? Right there. For example, earth, rock, water, fire, air, ether, house, forest, grain, cloth, or a body. Men, animals, insects, reptiles are living entities. Oh, actually, without volition, meaning those. Okay. Men, animals, insects, reptiles are living entities. They have the power to discern and desire. Of these, man has the greatest power of discernment. For this reason, some people call man the master of all living and non-living entities. So, footnote 7. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, expanding his own potency, Maya Shakti, created innumerable species of life to house the conditioned souls. Yet by creating the forms of trees, reptiles, animals, birds, snakes, and so on, the Lord is not satisfied within his heart. Then he created human life, which offers the conditioned soul significant intelligence to perceive the absolute truth and became pleased. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.9.28. That one's almost biblical.
Yeah. Yeah.
7th day, you took rest.
All right. Following the Mangalacharan, Bhaktivinoda Thakur immediately begins by asserting the third syllogistic component of Panchanganyaya, the reconciliation. In the section to follow, he will reconcile Sangati according to Gaudiya philosophy, the doubt, Shamshaya, concerning the subject, Vishaya, what is life, what is the goal of life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur begins the Sangati by describing the divisions of creation, or Sambandha Gyan, Chit, Achit, and Ishwara. Note, in the Western Academy, this inquiry constitutes a branch of metaphysics known as ontology, or the study of what types of entities exist, how they can be related within a hierarchy, and subdivided according to similarities and differences. According to the West, the first to propose such an ontological characterization of the fundamental nature of reality was the Greek philosopher Parmenides. Okay. He wasn't the guy in the barrel, right? That was another Enes, right? Okay, so that's one of the ways to deal is that as soon as there's a doubt there, you work on the reconciliation. You don't try to defeat the doubt. You show how it's already part of something that's already going on. So it just blends it in. Then, if that's there, fine, it'll come out in some other place. Then they'll just learn the correct answer by the future conversation. If not, once that's blended, then you can get into the details and show. So this is a very pleasant way. So that would be, you could technically, this would be the difference technically between the soft and the harder preaching. The harder preaching, you just stick to the logical progression, you know, for those who appreciate that. And for those who don't, then you just reverse it. You make your point as soon as you see that there's a doubt, you just immediately go to the end, reconcile it, and then if there's need, then you come back into the detail. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can defeating an argument be used as an example? I mean, not in necessarily to win over the other person, but if he's way out of line or to be generally just.
Absolutely. It depends upon the situation. If there's no one's going to benefit by it, why even get involved?
Yeah.
You know, if it's just an individual, then you can just see that's not going to get anywhere, so you just excuse yourself. But if you see that there's a group of persons and the others would benefit, even though that individual may not, then you might go through the process. And because of their nature, you know, means they will never find themselves to be wrong. They will ask unlimited questions, so from all angles, then you can present nicely the philosophy.
Mm.
So many times, in that way, it's worth dealing with it.
Mm.
Or if a person is very intelligent, so they're very thoughtful, so they like that logical. But what we're discussing here is the concept, the soft preaching is because of the emotional attachment that they don't like the logical element.
Yeah.
But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very expert at blending those two.
Mm.
But he will deal this element of reconciliation. Once he's gotten all that, then he'll give so much detail later, the fine detail. So there's the detail that establishes the correct, and then there's the finer ones within it of the practices. That's what we see here. We'll establish the philosophy. Then after, what will be the practices of devotional service? You know what I'm saying? Because we'll see that will also happen in the Jivadharma. Like that. First he's going to establish all the different things that establish how to understand someone again. Once that's there, then we'll get into the devotional process and into praying. Like that.
Right. What means reconciliation then? If he's still establishing the point?
Reconciliation is where another is what it is called synthesis, where you show that what you're saying and what they're saying are the same thing, though you may be using different examples or different situations.
So he starts with that?
Having made the point, the thesis, if there's a doubt will come up, then he'll use the reconciliation. Because sometimes the person will appreciate the logical sequence, but sometimes due to emotion they won't. So first you show it's all together, and then once that's seen, but this is not it's all nice, it doesn't matter, it's not a cover, it's actually showing how the two are the same. right? It's just that one has used different vocabulary, one has different definition of the terms. So you're showing how there isn't any difference, actually. But in this, it's showing how what they're saying is part of what you're saying. Like that. So then it becomes synthesized into what you're saying. So now what you're saying and what they're saying become the same thing. Then you can discuss detail. Does that make sense?
Means you have to know their
philosophy. Yes, you have to have figured out from their doubt what is actually the point. So that's why sometimes then, if it's more of a logical, then it's there. But if it's not, just by talking with them, what comes up, you see the values and how they view it, then you can see what's their doubt. You know, does that make sense? So that's the other aspect of your natural point of, you know, the social custom of just sitting and, you know, chit-chatting, is that you get to know what their position is. So then if there's a matter of explaining yourself, you know what the position is, so you know how to explain it according to their interest. Does that make sense? You know. So, you know, like, you know, that's why, you know, previously there would be like introductions, so you'd know who the person is, what their position is, what their, you know, education or social status. You'd know all these things, and then you could function. I heard in Japan, when two people meet, there's some certain things that are there, so then start discussing that until they figure out who's the senior person, right? And then they bow, and then you know who's supposed to bow lower. But, you know, you have to go through all that to figure out first. You know.
Exchange business cards first.
Oh, okay. And then okay, yes, okay. That's the etiquette business card. You know, but otherwise, before you say, here's, you know, such and such by the name, you can tell by the title that's on the front. You know, then, you know, then he's introduced. He's something in education or something in the administration, or he's some big business person, or he's some big artist, or like this. So then you understand the position. Then you could have, and then you're introduced. Then you know how to deal. Well, now that kind of, you know, doesn't work. And you know, how far do you get? You know? Okay. The Lord is the creator of all living and non-living entities. Since he does not have a material body, we cannot see him. Because you're dealing with material senses, so they can perceive what is the elements they have. You know what I'm saying? The eye works, the sight works by light, by fire. Therefore, without light, without fire, you can't see. Does that make sense? You know, like that. He is the perfect, the complete form of pure consciousness. He is our creator, protector, and controller. Then footnote 8. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. Yet he has no prior cause. He pervades the various states of wakefulness, dreaming, and unconscious deep sleep, and also exists beyond them. By entering the body of every living entity as the supersoul, he enlivens the body, senses, life airs, and mental activities. And thus all the subtle and gross organs of the body begin their functions. My dear King, know that personality of Godhead to be the supreme. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.35. So we see that all these quotes have been coming from 11th canto, because that's where it very much analyzes. Because 11th canto would be your especially your most prominent, though Gita could be used, but Gita doesn't deal with rasa. So when you're presenting the Dasa Mool, then it's dealing with the Navapramayas rather than the ten. Like that, because if you're just simply establishing philosophy, then you can do that through the nine, because rasa is left out. You know, you're just establishing the position of God, the living entity, the material world, and their relationship. Like that. But then that you have to establish an eternal relationship with the Supreme. But that, what is that relationship, that element of rasa, then that's more for those who will appreciate that. So then the 10th canto, I mean the 11th canto will be the analyzation, but it includes that element. It's not hidden like in the Navapramayas. By his will we prosper. By his will we meet with destruction. In his personal form, he is the master of Vaikuntha. He is the Lord of all lords. By his command, all the universe is moved. This is an elaboration, Vritti. This is an elaboration on the Ishvara principle. The Supreme Person's aspects of majesty and power as Vaikunthapati and Maharanarayan are given emphasis. Also, at this point in the discussion, his personal aspect is given prominence over his impersonal Brahman aspect. Right? Because you want to establish the personal as supreme. So if you talk too much about the all-pervading and this and that, they get distracted by that. Though it catches a lot of attention. So you're bringing out his supremacy as the Supreme Lord, and he's a person. So you want to put emphasis on that in the beginning. Right? Because that is the end that you want to get to. Right? But the most important is, in other words, he's a person because that's the ultimate goal you're trying to get to, a relationship with the person. He's the Supreme Lord because at this point we think we're the Supreme Lord. Right? And the impersonal aspect is not dealt with so much because then from that, then we're all one, and so therefore we have a shot at being God, right? You know, so we want to avoid that one. As the Lord does not have the gross form of material objects, we cannot perceive him with our senses. In this sense, he is called formless in the Vedas. Right? So now he's defining, he's removing all the doubts that come up about the impersonal concept, because by reading the Veda, one may think that the Lord is formless. However, as all objects have their own form, the Lord also has his own form. Footnote 9. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose transcendental form is full of bliss, truth, substantiality, and is thus full of the most dazzling splendor. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in himself the full-fledged functions of all the organs, and eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane. Brahma Samhita 532. Only material objects have material form. Conscious living entities have a conscious or spiritual form, Chaitanya Swarup. Human beings, though spiritual entities, additionally have a material body. Thus our spiritual form has become hidden within the material form. The Lord is pure consciousness or spirit. That is, he has no form except his spiritual form. The spiritual form is his body. We can see this form only with our pure spiritual eyes. We cannot see it with material eyes. Footnote 10. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shyamasundara, Krishna himself, with inconceivable innumerable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their heart of hearts with the eye of devotion tinged with the salve of love. So it's only through that devotion one can see. In other words, that's the spiritual platform. So here then, the elements coming out where the living entity has his natural spiritual form, his position, but that's covered by the material form. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, the spiritual form on the other is because one's entering into a particular consciousness. So the spiritual form gets left outside of that. Right? So that's how you get the example where the spiritual form is left outside entering material nature, just like when you go to a cloakroom, you hang your coat up there and then go inside. So like that, the spiritual form is left there, then you come in. But then that living entity takes on that consciousness, so that means that covers that whole thing. Does that make sense? So the two can exist simultaneously, yes.
And Maharaj, I was just wondering about the senses. We have spiritual senses, but they're covered by matter. Is that, that's the material senses? And then it's described that the Lord, he cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart. So I was wondering why it takes so long. You know, is there a thick layer of dust, or, you know, why, you know?
Oh, we'll let you answer. Let's say you take, there's dust on the mirror.
Yeah.
And you take a rag and you wipe once on the mirror.
Yeah.
Now, if you can immediately see yourself, was there a lot of dust?
Okay.
And if you wipe and it didn't make any difference, then that means there's a lot more.
But it's the Lord who is cleaning. We are having desire, and then he is cleaning. So
but the point is the cleansing process is going on only because we're willing to take part in the process.
Okay.
Just like, let's say you have a cat, and the cat is very stinky. So you take the cat and put it into the bathtub of water.
Okay.
Who's doing the cleaning?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the other person, the cat, needs to cooperate. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's desire.
Yeah,
desire.
So generally speaking, most cats don't like water. So most people don't like their false ego removed.
So proportionate to our correcting our mentality, and he is cleaning, he is revealing the real.
Yeah, it's becoming revealed, but it's not that he has to get down. It's any problem for him, he has to get down there and roll up his sleeves and get down there.
Here we go again.
Yeah, you know, no, it's not like that. But the point is the process is happening because we're interested in the process.
Okay.
Yes.
Throw a coin. What's the audience that this book is directed at?
Ah, that's what it said in the beginning.
Those in the 18th century?
No, it says here. Is that they be sincere about reaching the truth. That's the audience. Oh, you weren't here for yesterday's. Yeah, so the audience is those who don't know about the absolute truth but want to know. Like that. But the presentation is being done through the style that someone who has a Western background, you know, and pattern of thought. In other words, they have come in touch with the modern academy. So they teach you a way of thinking, right? Because Bhagavatam is for those who have already accepted. So you don't have to worry about that angle. You know, Gita's dealing with, it means you're dealing with the same things, but the Gita's dealing with, you're dealing with the Vedic standpoint, which is also universal, but it carries that flavor. But this one will carry that flavor of dealing with those who feel the modern intellectual pursuit has a value, and so that it carries that aspect. Does that make sense? That's why
it's hard, yeah. It's harder to understand. In a sense.
Yeah, because, well, you also have the element that it's not story. Like the morning one, that's story. The same thing will be put into the story. But then you see it applied. While here, all it is simply showing the academic going through it and just what is exactly there. So you can see it very concisely. The idea is you can get an overview of the whole thing. Because the other, as the story goes, you may forget what happened before. So that's the idea. So that's why the two are studied. These two are studied together.
So there's less room for emotions in this study.
Yeah, because it's giving an intellectual presentation. It's logical. Though it will deal with all these means. Otherwise, why would he use these methods?
Yeah.
But it still is that the persons were educated and they considered themselves intellectual and thoughtful.
Yeah.
So you're logically presenting, but also understanding that underlying there's a false ego that is not in line with the Vedic concept of ego.
But he's actually stroking that ego in a sense by presenting it in this way that they like.
Yeah, but this can apply to basically anybody in the modern context because everybody's been exposed to the modern educational system because, you know, they've been quite thorough to make sure that their system's the only system and if anything else is not there, you don't get the credit for it.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
I didn't understand the point where the spiritual body left behind, because sometimes you also say that it is like dormant or innate in the living entity's heart. what you were explaining just a minute ago.
But what's in the heart?
Jiva.
And?
The super soul and mind.
Okay, so the Lord is there. So the Lord's outside the creation. Right? But the living entity, because of his attachment, he enters into the creation. Right? But the Lord also comes into the creation, though he's separate from the creation. So if it's simply sitting there, then with the Lord, then it's still that element of separate, but it's covered by our consciousness that we think we're the body. The point is the two can go on at once. The idea that it's covered, but at the same time it's been left. You know what I'm saying? Because when you say dormant in the heart, that means it's covered. Okay, this is... However, as all objects have their own forms, the Lord has his own form. Only material... Oh, we already finished that. This passage describes the difference between the infallible Lord and the fallible living entity. So far, the discussion has been restricted to the Nityabhata Jiva and caged within matter. Right? We haven't discussed the liberated soul, or actually the full nature of the soul. We've just discussed the Nityabhata. Right? Also, potential doubt is addressed. If God exists, why can't I see him? Because that's the first thing. You know, it's just like, you know, well, if the president exists, you know, have you seen him? So, yeah, I've seen him on television. How do you know it's not a body double? You know, how do you know that's not a trick? There is no president. There is no Washington, D.C., right, you know. Actually, if you go there, it's actually, you know, there's a better quality of, you know, how you say, Disney World there. They don't tell anybody about it, you know. So it's just a matter of... Many unfortunate people do not believe in God, for their eye of knowledge is closed. Because they cannot see the Lord's form with their material eyes, they say he does not exist. Just as blind men cannot understand the nature of sunlight, atheists cannot believe in the existence of God. Bhagavad Gita, it gives the thing, I don't know. So Bhagavad Gita 16:7-8. Sorry?
This is the demonic quality. I don't have a Gita.
Oh, okay. That's okay. Although all men, by their very nature, believe in God, if they learned duplicitous logic through bad association from childhood, they gradually become overcome by that bad influence and disbelieve in the Lord's existence. That, of course, is their loss. It is no loss for the Lord. Right? Somebody doesn't believe in you, it doesn't mean your existence is in some way hampered. It's not you sit there and start to flicker a little bit or something.
Sorry, I just remembered this verse from Gita is that the world is produced by lust and that there's actually no substance.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. I think like that, yeah. That's, yes.
So, Shikshamrita presents philosophy and through philosophy culture, and Srimad Dharma presents culture and through culture philosophy. Can you say like this?
Means one is using the, you would say, more the like the Upanishadic or the Vedanta, where you give the points and you give some explanation. You know, in other words, this is the points with the explanation together, so it's not separate. And the Jiva Dharma is using the Puranic, where you show practically how people used it, how they exchanged. Is that something?
So more culture will be in Jiva Dharma.
You'll see more, yes. This is just showing that the culture is important, but the actual application of it is not here. That's what he said, this is not for tasting. This is only to establish that the fact that this is what's there. Just like in Gita, it establishes the fact. You know, it tells what it is. But then Bhagavatam then explains those same things, but through what, you know, the lifestyle and applications that devotees use. Is that right? Yeah. Good.
Many times we hear the philosophy that if somebody is successful in their, you know, they have money, the so-called successful money, house, partner, material facility, and then they're saying that for the weak, you know, those who cannot get these facilities, then there is religion. You know, I'd like some kind of crutch. What to do about this?
Yeah, when the stock market crashes, then we'll see how much he's interested in crutches. You know, it's also great, but then when his, you know, wife files for divorce and takes half his money, unless he's in California, she'll get about 70%. But, yeah, so don't get married in California. So then, maybe 75. No, I think 70. Yeah, like that. You understand this? It sounds great because they think they're the doer and what they're going with is going along. But the point is they're not the one that controls the creation. The laws that they're functioning under are not their laws. The laws of economics are not their laws. Right? They're only successfully dealing with them. So, therefore, at some point, then you do proper, because the laws aren't theirs, that means they didn't establish what's right and wrong. So if you do something that's right, you'll get a good result. You do something that's wrong, you won't get a good result. So if someone has no money, it means previously they didn't act properly. They don't have money. He's done something right, now he has money. But having that money, if he doesn't use it properly, next life he'll be the poor one.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of a crutch, it's just a matter of facts. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Yeah.
Would it be like saying that only weak people need to use a seatbelt while driving a car?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, if you're a good driver, then you don't need a seatbelt. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. But then if it's so weak, how will they use the seatbelt? How will they buckle the seatbelt? Like that.
That's true. Thank God for airbags.
Yes. This is a description of the relationship between Chit and Ishwara, minute consciousness and the supreme consciousness. Significantly, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions the first of many misguided philosophies to come, atheism. In his critique, he alludes to the initial premise of the Mangalacharan, that bewilderment is a poor vantage point from which to philosophize. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also connects this point to the four defects of mundane life, the tendency to commit mistakes, be illusioned, cheat others, and be limited by imperfect senses. Right, that's what he's saying, is that their position is incomplete to that because of these elements. Through flawed education and bad association, materialists are cheated into exalting empiric knowledge as the be-all and end-all. Right, so what they can see with their senses, they take it that this is the absolute. But the point is that's what you see with the senses. Now what are you going to do with that? You know, that's what they don't deal with. Right? Because if you look at it, it means even we say, yes, the world is progressing because of science. How many scientists have actually made the world progress? The scientist comes up with something, and then someone else, an administrator, a business person, takes that observation and turns it into something practically that people can use. Very rare has a scientist ever figured that out. You know what I'm saying? So it's not, it's what you do with the science. It's not the science itself. Right? So it's not the main thing, but sadly people think it's sad. Right? And then, yeah. One should not think that Vaikuntha is a material place. Madras, Bombay, Benares, Calcutta, London, and Paris are examples of material places. Notice New York was left out.
Could be.
Either that or it's transcendental. To go to those places,
thought it was interesting you mentioned Benares, because that's Varanasi. You know?
Yeah, 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 because that's the mundane place. One message, because our sannyasi came from there, right? One must traverse a great expanse of earth in many countries. Even if one travels by railway or ship, it may take a long time. Or to go to those places, one must traverse. Material body must be moved. Vaikuntha is not such a place. 12. I worship that transcendental seat known as Svetadvip, whereas loving consorts, the Lakshmis and their unalloyed spiritual essence, practice the amorous service of the Supreme Lord Krishna as their only lover, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem, water is nectar, every word is song, every gate is a dance, the flute is the favorite attendant, effulgence is full of transcendental bliss, and the supreme spiritual entities are all enjoyable and tasty. Where numberless milk cows doesn't mean you go up. Not bad. Where numberless milk cows always emit transcendental oceans of milk. Where there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away even for the duration of half a moment. That realm is known as Goloka, only to a few self-realized souls in this world. Brahma Samhita 5.56. It has a different nature, transcending the material universes. It is conscious, eternal, and faultless. It is not perceived by the eye, nor conceived of by the mind. The Supreme Lord resides in this inconceivable place. If a person is able to please the Lord, he can go there and serve the Lord eternally. Herein is described the difference between the material and spiritual worlds. There is also a rebuttal to the atheist charge that Vaikuntha is some mythical invention. Quote, just as God's form is beyond the purview of the material senses, so too is the spiritual world. What is called happiness in this world is not eternal. It remains for a short time and then disappears. Everything of this world is filled with suffering. Birth itself is difficult, a cause for sorrow. After birth, we must nourish the body with food. If we have no food, we suffer. There is always some sort of affliction, some excessive heat or cold. To rid ourselves of the suffering, we have to undergo bodily suffering to earn money. If we do not build a house, we do not have a place to stay. On getting married, we have to raise children. When old age finally approaches, it seems we are left with nothing. Throughout life, we suffer through argument and disagreement with others. There is no such thing as pure happiness in this world. Therefore, people accept that happiness is the momentary cessation of grief or want. However, it is very difficult to live in such a world. It doesn't always work out so great. The relationship between chit and achit, or the living entity, and the material world is described here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur dismisses the jiva's vain attempts at material enjoyment and summarizes the karmi's suffering by referencing both the six material whips, hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death, and the six bodily transformations, birth, growth, maintenance, reproduction, dwindling, and death. Right? So always these are giving a problem. So when one is over, another one is there, or, you know, at times then there's more than one. That's when things start to get really freaky, right? You know, if it's one at a time, you can handle it. When it builds up, then, you know, and just when you thought it's not going to get any better, you know, worse, then, you know, something worse happens. If one attains the Lord's abode, he does not experience temporary happiness and distress, but rather attains unlimited and eternal joy. To this end, we must try to satisfy the Lord. Man's highest benefit starts when he begins to satisfy the Lord. But man begins his practice only after pure knowledge appears within him. Right? Because otherwise, if without pure knowledge, you will think that I myself am the one to be happy, right? So it's by my endeavors, I'll be happy. I'll arrange it myself, I'll be happy. But then when he has pure knowledge, he understands it's only by serving Krishna, I'll be happy, right? Then it starts to work very nicely. Unfortunately, most people... Oh, that's a footnote. This is 13. One who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of life from the very beginning of life. In other words, from the tender age of childhood. to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary like other bodies, it is meaningful because in the human form one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.6.1. Right, so the human body is rarely achieved. I mean, talking about overpopulation, so there's 7 billion of them, so it sounds like there's plenty of them. But compared to any other living entities, there are not very many. You know, unless, of course, you compare them to dodo birds or something like this. But if you're using anything else, then there's a lot of living entities. So it's rare. Right? And it's also here is that you can use it to progress. The other planetary systems, the tendency is not to progress, but simply to enjoy the facilities that are there, like that. So here, then, one is able to make that progression.
Here, when it says his activity should be given up, in the case of Dhruva and Prahlad, they continued as kings, but that's a secondary. The primary was a service.
Yes, means in other words, let's say the person's a king, but you say that should be given up. What should be done? Devotional service. So now, what would a king do as devotional service? Yeah, he would be a king for Krishna. Yeah. Does that make sense? So in other words, if it's connected to Krishna, it's devotional service. If it's not connected to Krishna, it's mundane activity. So mundane activity is given up. So sometimes we make the mistake is that means we give up all the occupation and all the ashram duties. All we do is just chant Hare Krishna. Now, if you can do that, great. But how many can actually just do that? You know what I'm saying? So the idea is that how those two go together. But if we misunderstand and think that giving up material activity means giving up the particular activities, means giving up the mechanics of the activity being performed. That's not what I was saying. What it means is it's mundane because of the consciousness. Right? If I'm cooking for myself, that's mundane activity. If I cook for Krishna, it's spiritual activity. Mechanics remain the same. So it's not giving up the mechanics, it's giving up what makes it mundane. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty, is that the living entity is acting in a way that he's not connecting Krishna to it, so it's mundane. So the problem is not the mechanical activity, the problem is the activity is not being connected to the Lord. Yeah, the fruit's not connected, or we don't see the process connected or something. Ultimately, of course, the fruit's the main. If that's there, then you can work back from there. But because the fruit element goes also along with the sambandha element, right? How you identify yourself is how you identify the fruit. If I'm the enjoyer, the fruit's for me. Right? If I'm the controller, I'm the one that got the fruit. So if I got the fruit, why shouldn't I enjoy the fruit? But if I'm not the controller, then actually I didn't produce the fruit. So then it makes it more open to, well, therefore, then the fruit actually is not mine. You know. So the two go together. You get the proper knowledge, but you focus on endeavor on the results. That's what makes it devotional or not. You understand? When we're discussing at other times the mechanics of analyzing the position, knowing how the elements of that endeavor function, and then being able to use those elements to get that result, right? That's how the skill functions, because activity only works with knowledge. So people who are successful, they have knowledge. People who are not successful don't have knowledge, right? But still, that just makes it whether you're getting a good result or not a good result. But devotional services, whatever result you're getting, it's for Krishna. Right? So now if it's for Krishna, then naturally we would want to get a good result, not a bad result. You know, it's not like, wow, I got such a nice bad result for Krishna. Oh, was it bad? It was so bad, you know. Does that make sense, you know? Yes.
Maharaj, with connecting
our activities to Krishna, is there ever a time where our ego comes in and make like a concoction in our mind that we're connecting it to Krishna, but really it's not?
Yeah, that's why it's always recommended the traditional applications, because then there is a method that you go through. So then the false ego is more just, I'm the one doing it. But if one's working outside of that, there can be the element that one makes up that your own process. Or even if one's following the proper process, if the consciousness is not connecting it to Krishna, then it's technically not connected. But now if the final result, you finally give it to Krishna, then it means everything else becomes purified. But if at the end it's not, then... Okay. Unfortunately, most people think that they can enjoy the world now and worship the Lord in old age, right? Because, you know, why it means it. You can do something now is that, you know, do it when you get old. Then you can worship the Lord, right? That, however, is unacceptable, for time is a precious thing. Footnote 14. Oh, there were more quotes within the last one about pure knowledge. Okay. Therefore, while in material existence, a person fully competent to distinguish right from wrong must endeavor to achieve the highest goal of life as long as the body is stout and strong and is not embarrassed by dwindling. Right, this would also establish the next one. After many, many births and deaths, one achieves the rare human form of life, which, although temporary, affords one the opportunity to attain the highest perfection. Thus, a sober human being should quickly endeavor for the ultimate perfection of life as long as his body, which is always subject to death, has not fallen down and died. After all, sense gratification is available even in the most abominable species of life, whereas Krishna consciousness is possible only for a human being. Right? It means that one should see is that human life means you can enjoy the senses, but so can the animals, but the animals can't be God conscious. So that's the real point of it, right? In other words, why would you use it for something that the animals do? And they're generally better at it.
It's like, tell someone, oh, you worship God when you're old, you say, no, you gratify your senses when you're a pig.
Yeah. Okay. And now you... Okay, then 14, that was about the old age. Okay. After many, many births and deaths, one achieves a rare human form of life, which, although temporary, affords one the opportunity to attain the highest perfection. Thus, a sober human being should quickly endeavor for the ultimate perfection of life as long as his body, which is always subject to death, has not fallen down and died. After all, sense gratification is available even in the most abominable species of life, whereas Krishna consciousness is possible only for a human being. So while the health is there, one should use it for endeavoring in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, when the senses are weak, then one's too distracted, especially after a long life of sense gratification. Your main focus is on how you can't enjoy the senses anymore, rather than, okay, now it's time to get serious about Krishna consciousness. Like that.
Also in that book, compilation called Civilization and Transcendence, I think it's a
Brazilian
compilation. Okay. So Prabhupada is saying, if you endeavor for the spiritual life, then whatever he would get already is coming, right? The good and the bad is already
coming. Yeah.
So if you want that for the spiritual.
Oh, okay, yeah, good point. Good point. Like that. So making the point that Prabhupada's saying that if one endeavors for the spiritual life, whatever one would have gotten anyway on the material platform, both good and bad, you would get anyway, right? You have to throw in the and bad also. Otherwise, no, I take up devotional life, I should only be the good, and the bad shouldn't happen, because like that. But the point is the material, you'll get the good and the bad, but that's all you'll get. And then it's over. Right? If you endeavor for the spiritual, you'll get the good and bad and the spiritual.
That's in your movie.
Yeah. The good, the bad, and the spiritual. Yeah, okay. Does that make sense? So that will last. You know, the good was okay, and the bad was less than okay. Whatever. Yes.
So when we say, "Oh, you got hurt," but Krishna actually minimized your suffering,
yes,
we say that
oh, you're enjoying, but Krishna's actually minimizing your happiness.
Don't worry, Krishna. Don't worry, the happiness will go away. You won't be distracted.
Mars, where does that contamination come from, performing Krishna conscious or religious activities in order to have a nice life and not have
it? Oh, where does that come? Means karma. Karma is, I perform good work, therefore I should get good result. And good results you can enjoy. Bad results generally you can't enjoy. Yeah. You know, it's like that. So, so that's right. And so religious activities are pious activities. So that's the idea, is that if I perform it, I should get all the facilities. But then the point is then it has to be performed properly. If you want the material results, you have to perform it properly. But the spiritual results, you do it to please Krishna, you get the devotional benefit. Then the more properly you try to perform it means more properly you're trying to get Krishna good benefit. So that increases the devotional element. So the increase in the proper performance of pious activities is not for your own benefit. Therefore, if the endeavor is that we would call karma, that's karma yoga, but it's still pure devotional service because the result is not for us. You know, just like we use the intelligence, so that's jnana yoga, but it's not that it's the results for us. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. We should begin to practice from the very day we see its urgency. Man's life is indeed a rare achievement, but is also insecure, as we cannot say when we will die. Thus, we should never think that we should not worship the Lord when we're our children. In history, we see how Dhruva and Prahlad received the Lord's mercy when they were children. Is there any doubt that any human being, capable of doing an activity, cannot, without effort, achieve it? It's probably of having, or having.
Having capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or being capable.
Is there? Yeah, being capable of. Okay, being capable. Oh, I see. Is there any doubt that any human being, having the capacity of doing an activity, cannot without effort achieve it? So one should not have a doubt that results are gained through endeavor. Right? It means you can't get a result without an endeavor. Does that make sense? So you have the capacity to do something, but if you don't do something, you don't get the result. Does that make sense? As well, what is practiced from an early age gradually becomes a natural action. So if you wait till you're old, it's very hard to learn something new. But if you practice it from when you're young, then it becomes very easy. So even when you're old and things are difficult, it will be easy enough to do. Like that. Bhaktivinoda states, Riti, that Vaikuntha is full of bliss and the material world full of suffering. Thus he exhorts us to practice Krishna consciousness as a matter of the utmost urgency. It is the means by which the jiva re-establishes proper relations with the Lord and his real home. At this juncture, the basic topics of Sambandhagyan have been covered, and the discussion shifts towards the process of perfection, Abhideya, in more detail. Because now you can see it's because he was using the... Yeah, he's just... Man attempts to please the Lord for four reasons. These four are religion, economic development, and sense gratification. These are described in the Vedas as trivarga, or three ways to salvation. Within these three categories are education and self-realization. Ritualistic ceremonies performed according to Vedic injunction. Logic, the science of law and order, and the various means of earning one's livelihood. These are the eternal subject matters of study in the Vedas. These are the external subject matters of study in the Vedas. And therefore I consider them material. However, I consider surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord, of Lord Vishnu, to be transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.6.26. Right. So religion, economic development, and sense gratification are methods to attain salvation. Right. But the whole purpose of all this is Krishna consciousness. Right. And so all these means education, because in religion you have to get educated. Self-realization is your process of ashram life. Like that. Ritualistic ceremonies will also be there, and that will generate your economic development, sense gratification. And logic, if you don't use logic, then you won't be able to understand what should be properly done and not done. Right? The science of law and order, because it keeps everybody in line, because everybody's trying to enjoy themselves without necessarily performing the religious ceremonies. So you have to be able to keep the proper order. And the means of earning one's livelihood, because then you have the facilities, right? But that's based on, if you perform the religion, therefore your livelihood will produce something. So it's actually your facility is coming from proper performance of duties. So it's not necessarily that what you're doing right now that produces it. It's performing the activity that you're supposed to do. You know what I'm saying? That's why you can be performing activity you're not necessarily supposed to be doing, and you're getting a result. Right? You know, the businessman is doing all kinds of business. He's cheating, but he's getting money. Right? It's because previously he's been doing the business because he's supposed to be doing it. Right? So he's still getting the results of that now. But when that result runs out, it means he's cheating today, he's making money. But after a few years, he's cheating, and then he's getting caught, and he's not making money. He's losing money. So it wasn't the cheating that made the money, or the business that made the money. It was his proper performance of duties that made the money. Yes?
People say, can you prove that?
Can you prove that? Yeah. Can you disprove it? You know, otherwise, why is it that people who do bad stuff, it always ends up bad? You know, why is it that there's a common sense amongst all living entities, except for, of course, the one asking the question, is that proper performance of activities gets good results? Right? The point is even the point, the person says, can you prove that? Can he work with the market not according to the rules of the market? Can you go out and buy something more expensive than you sell it and make profit? No. Can you upset your particular, you know, group of persons you want to sell your product to? You know, can you present it badly? You know, can you have, can when they come into your shop, you don't deal with them properly, or you don't keep it nicely, or the goods are damaged, or can you do any of those? Those are all against the business rules. So what do you, but so if you follow all those, that's the correct. Why? Because that's the nature of business. That's the religion of business. So unless you follow the religion of business properly, it won't work. So, of course, anybody who's successful will understand this. It's just their definition of religion is that you're performing particular rituals, you know, like that. But no, everything has its religion. You know, the chair, if it's pushed under the table, can you sit on it? Why not? Right? It has to be pulled out, then you can sit on it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So everything has its religion. And that's what they're pulling you up on. So they're claiming that they're not religious, but the reason they're successful is that they're very aware of what works. But they're not interested in the supreme religion. They're only interested in economic religion, or, you know, social power religion, or, you know, like that. According to this condition of life, oh, it means man attempts to please the Lord for four reasons, according to his condition of life. Right? So he's trying to please the Lord, but he'll use a religion, economic development, a sense gratification as the process to please. From fear for satisfying material aspirations, from a sense of duty, and from genuine attraction. Okay, so fear is that if I don't do it, I'll lose. Right? Like that. Or worse, you know, I'll go to hell, you know, something like that. Satisfy material aspirations. If I do this, everything will be pious and nice, therefore I'll do it, right? For a sense of duty, that this is what I'm supposed to do, but it's still a bit dry. And from a genuine attraction, you actually want to please the Lord. like that. So these are the four levels. So that's why sometimes when these things are described, they're described on these different levels. You know how Krishna's nice and he's so beautiful and this and that and so. And if you don't worship him, then you go to hell. Okay. Yes.
These are the four reasons.
No, these are the ways of like that. Like you may be following religion out of fear or economic development out of fear, or sense gratification out of even. It's all these different things is that you serve the Lord, you do what you're supposed to do out of fear or out of you want something from it or a sense of duty or from genuine attraction. Right? You know, so then. Yeah. Let me just go. Okay, I'm just going to describe different kinds of people. Okay, so then let's leave that for tomorrow. No, Thursday. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti ki, Janatai Gaura Penyanti.
And as a note to the students, whoever wants course material for Thursday, please come see me. Thank you. Want course material for the upcoming whole classes, then I need to take your name down.
Sounds nice.
In this course.
Yeah.
For Chaitanya Shikshan.
Yes.
The second course.
Yes. It's like a three-course meal.
Yes. We call it a meal. You got the main, then you have the second, secondi,
and then
not sure if Dharma Shastra is the dessert, but
depends on where you're not.
Yeah.